Hi, everyone, and welcome to this special episode of the Passive House Podcast, recorded in Tarrytown, New York, at the FiasCon 2021 Passive House Conference. Before we get started, I want to thank Fias for putting on the conference and for coordinating with us on these interviews, as well as NYSERDA for serving as conference partner with Fias and community partner with us here at the Passive House Accelerator. Thank you, too, to Rockwell North America. Their generous support underwrote all of these interviews, as well as our coverage of the conference. With that, please enjoy my interview with James Geppner of NYSERDA. So I have James Geppner here from NYSERDA joining me for a chat. James is a good friend and also a leader and a thinker. And NYSERDA is, I'm sure, very happy to have him on board. Thank you very much, James, for joining me for
this chat. Yeah. Thank you.
And so we're here at FiasCon. This is a special interview
part of an in-person event.
I know, it's amazing. And NYSERDA is a major supporter, a conference partner of the conference. And that's part of why we're in Tarrytown, because we're really, a lot of the sessions are focused on what's happening in New York. So you are actually in just about 20 minutes going to get in front of a lectern and do a presentation. Can you share with us? Well, actually, let's start by a quick introduction of you and your role at NYSERDA, and then maybe you could go into the presentation a little bit.
Sure. So I'm with the Retrofit New York program, and our the aim of our program is to introduce replicable, scalable retrofit solutions into the market, and we're specifically focused on the multifamily space. So we're looking for, ideally, retrofit solutions that can be applied to buildings in a very short amount of construction time without displacing the tenants, and also give the tenants good air quality and a good quality of life and pretty dramatic energy reductions in the order of 50% or more.
Probably the most important nut that we need to crack in addressing the impact that buildings are making on climate and the impact that climate can make on people and buildings as well, right? It's about mitigation, but it's also about adaptation and resilience.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the beautiful feature of these buildings is that not only are they going to be protected during heat waves, the tenants will have less likely to be exposed to sort of a harmful situation, but also when there are power outages. So these buildings are adaptive and reduce emissions.
Yeah. So what are you going to share at the presentation you're about to make?
So this is, I decided to make something a little more unusual, less aimed towards sort of business models and market strategies, and really about perception. Language is one aspect of perception. It's a tool of perception. So as I was saying a couple minutes ago, we recognize the need for telescopes when we're looking at things very, very far away, and we recognize the need for microscopes when things are very, very small. And it's important that we also recognize that language is a tool for perception. How we describe a thing determines really if we see the thing. There are ways to use language where we completely miss details, and that is a very common thing. So basically my presentation is about it gives definitions for particular items that will allow us to see basically the difference and the outcomes produced by zero-energy retrofits and zero-energy buildings in general. So it's language that I'm hoping to socialize so that people start using these terms and that building owners, housing agencies, architects can actually see these differences better. Basically, so there are a suite of tools that I'm hoping to introduce.
Right. We have a certain way that we speak about passive house and high-performance building and what we're the items that we're focused on when we're thinking about designing these.
Right.
And that is a very specific language that is easily lost in translation.
Exactly.
No matter what audience we're talking about. And
exactly.
you're thinking through probably some specific audiences. So what are some examples of what is currently lost in translation when we use passive house jargon, and how that's how you're hoping to reshape?
So an easy example is an air leak. An air leak is, again, and I just put things in definitions, right, with framing that thing. So an air leak is a loss of usable space. It's very simple. So if you're gonna, when you buy a building or when you, you know, when you pay a property tax, you're paying a property tax for 100% of the building. You're buying 100% of the building. And if there's an air leak, you are lacking, you're losing usable space. And the result is what I call a second term, impaired space. So impaired space is any space, any percentage, and we can use this metric, any percentage of the building that is not fully usable due to either high rates of moisture, mold, overheating, chills. So if you, in January, if you can't sit next to a window because it's too cold, that's a lack of usable space. If you can't store something in a basement because of high humidity or a mold risk, that's a loss of usable space. If your apartment is overheated and so you can't spend time in a room, that's a loss of usable space. And we can actually measure it and say, okay, out of this particular apartment or this particular home, what is our total usable space? Because again, the person's paying for 100% of it, but maybe they're not getting 100% of use out of it.
And so what are the key audiences that you're crafting these terms for?
Well, I think an important thing is when architects, engineers, and lenders speak to building owners, that we all need to be using the same terminology so that the building owner can make a fully informed decision. Daniel Kahneman has the Nobel Prize winning behavioral scientist has a term is what you see is all there is. And that is, if you give a person a detail, sometimes they'll only see that detail and not look for other information that might modify the situation. So in our certain senses, a good example is if we say a surgery is 90% effective, we'll immediately go, well, that sounds like a pretty good surgery, right? It's like, okay, but we might walk away going, great, let's get it, right? And that's the decision. But then if you start to follow other questions, well, are there side effects? Are there quality of life factors that will affect me? What is the cost of it? You know, like all the other questions that might fully color a thing. So this vocabulary is really meant to start to fill in some of the details, because our tendency is not to look beyond that single piece of information we're given.
Right, right. So what are some other examples of cool transformations of bad passive house jargon?
So rather than talk about units in a building, talking about unit years. So as everyone here at the conference knows, passive house buildings and zero-energy retrofit buildings last longer because the building's protected, its structure elements are protected from moisture intrusion. So it might get anywhere from 5 to 10 to 15 years of extra life. And so when a building owner is thinking about a conventional building versus a zero energy retrofit or new construction passive house, if they think about just the square footage, then they're missing some important information. But if they think about the years of life and basically divide that cost over the years of life, then they're getting a very different piece of information. And when you purchase something, knowing the longevity should be key to understanding what kind of value you're being delivered. So if we keep talking about square feet and if we keep talking about units, then we're basically missing what we're buying. Because ultimately, people don't buy things, they buy outcomes. And so if I'm buying a house, the outcome I'm seeking is not just a physical thing, it's a physical thing that exists over a period of time and delivers me protection from the elements, shelter, and so forth. So unit years as opposed to units is another vocabulary item.
Right, right.
Just trying to think about others. Scale. A very important one, and this one I start out with air leaks because this one's far more complicated. Air leaks is a simpler example. Scale, we think about it as cost reduction, but really it's expertise that is made available to people with less buying power. So effectively, scale increases the buying power of the person. So I have in my pocket the thinking of Johnny Ives. Now, if I tried to hire Johnny Ives as a consultant, could I afford Johnny Ives?
Right.
Absolutely not.
Right.
And that in my pocket, I not only have the thinking of Johnny Ives, but I have the thinking of many other people, and I can completely afford it. So scale is something that over time basically takes expertise and delivers it in a way where a greater proportion of people can afford it. So we want to expand the access to the benefits of passive house and zero energy buildings. And how do we expand the access? You know, we need to basically increase people's buying power by delivering scale.
Right.
So to me, that is a key point, And to complicate it a little bit further, when we are used to buying things that have attributes of scale, like computers, like phones, and then we go buy something that doesn't have attributes of scale, like a service, like a custom-made suit, or a consultant, those things start to seem relatively much more expensive. So our perception is that our buying power is greatly diminished on those things. And so so people in the passive house and zero into building sphere, I think, would want to like say, okay, my expertise has tremendous value. How do I deliver it in a way where people have high buying power and can really appreciate it? Because not only is it deliver those attributes and give people access to clean air, you know, protection from the elements, but also it prevents me and my business from being kind of like pushed aside by economic trends, because people's buying power diminish when things aren't scalable.
You know, one of the ways that technology is often, or one of the ways that we see scale of expertise happen is through technology. I mean, right. the Johnny Ives example is one, right. Or the old example of the gramophone, you know, and like the opera singer no longer having to show up every night to sing opera, but they can just cut a record.
Right.
Do you see that as what role is technology playing in this conversation? Is that central, or is it maybe sometimes important, sometimes not?
Yeah, no, it's really key. I mean, when we think about the cost of the efficiency of the construction industry relative to the efficiency of other industries in the U.S., we see that the construction industry has not improved its efficiency over the last, like, 40 years. And that is really because it's been more service-oriented as opposed to product-oriented. And a product is just another way of saying scale, really. I mean, you can take a product and continually improve its attributes of scale, but even as a product versus a service, you have some elements of scale.
Yeah.
So technology is key to being able to, like, at every level, be able to deliver scale. So an example that I don't think anyone here would object to, because there are disputes about how much you can create a single solution that can be applied to buildings. But when a loan originator is sending the loan application to their own credit committee, would it harm anyone? Would it be a problem at all to have, accompanying that loan application, a single document that showed the risk mitigation attributes of a passive house or zero entry building? That was itself, that document scaled because it was the same document on every single one of those loan applications. Because in my view, that would speed the loan origination process and reduce financing fees and administrative costs, and again, make capital more available to finance zero entry retrofits and passive house.
Yeah. We would need to make sure that we're not going to make you late to your presentation. You have 10 minutes before your presentation starts.
Great. So we
better just have one more question. I think I'll just leave it open-ended. And I mean, what else do you want to add? Do you want to share kind of what's on the horizon in your program some message that you want to share with the PassiveHaus community?
I think this is something that you and I have talked about before, but it's just another definition that's in the presentation coming up, which is what is a decision? A lot of decisions, we can break decisions into a number of categories if we really fine tune it. But a decision in most contexts is a prediction of the future. And if we, going back to that building owner's decision, if that prediction of the future doesn't take into account rising insurance costs, climate-related events, right, floods, then it's not, we can like put aside the ethical dimensions of this decision or even the externalities, the climate impacts of that decision. If we just focus on the building owner's own self-interest, they can be overlooking some things that is fundamentally altering their business and their business model.
Yeah.
So if they're not taking into account those future scenarios, if they're not looking at the likelihood of these events and factoring that into their present decision, then that is what I would call a bad decision. A bad decision is one that does not anticipate future events that is going to affect the outcome. So again, a decision is a prediction of the future. A bad decision is a decision where it's a poor prediction of the future. And a good decision is one where there's an effective and good prediction of the future.
Yeah, and so wake up, people.
Yeah, so to me, that is really a central thing.
Yeah.
Is it's not, you know, when you build a building, you're making a long-term decision. And everyone that values that, whether it's going to be sold, whether it's going to be insured, whether it's going to be constructed, everyone stands at a different point in the future looking forward. And so that building owner needs to really consider, what does the person that might buy this building see in 5 years, in 10 years? Because they're going to have a very different risk calculation, see very different scenarios than that person might in the present. But that person in the present really needs to be able to see through their point of view.
Yeah.
So.
That's so great. James, I always learn so much when I talk with you.
I do too. I do too. I'd like to ask you a bunch of questions too, because I would get that same feeling.
Well, really, I really appreciate you sitting down and talking right before your presentation, and I'm sure you're going to knock everybody's socks off. It's really good info.
We'll see. We'll see about that. I'm not going to make a prediction on that.
Fair enough. Thanks.